This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Boom! It's Friday.
Welcome, everybody, to Newsmakers. That is Dave Bourne, and I am Brent DeHart, and Dave loves Fridays.
And it's Duck Day.
You know, and it is Duck Day. It's ducks tonight. I have got it's shameful, but it's true. I have a 75-inch TV.
You do?
And
mine's 65.
Hooked up to surround sound.
Of course.
And you can bet I'll be watching the ducks tonight.
I'm going to be
in HD on 75 inches.
Nice.
Perhaps a beverage in hand. Been rooting the ducks on to beat the Colorado Buffaloes. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing in the fall about Fridays is it means college football's coming. And that's
true.
That's my biggest sports indulgence, honestly. I barely even watch football on Sundays and almost never on Mondays, but Saturdays are reserved for college football.
I watch other games on Saturday for college football that I don't normally or I wouldn't normally do. I got more into the college because they're more exciting.
Yeah.
Sometimes than the professional on Sundays.
And it's, you know, I sound like an old fart.
Yeah.
So don't.
You are, but that's
stop
okay.
it. But when it comes to the pros, it's just become so much more like entertainment and less about athleticism and less about the sport, right? I want to watch the contest. I want to watch. And I like the college emotional connection and playing for your school and all of those things. But, you know, people don't take curtain calls after going out and doing their job so much. So I would be, it's sad. It's true. Guy goes and sacks the quarterbacks and then he runs 10, 15 yards away from his huddle to find the end zone camera and take a bow and flex his muscles and do a little dance. And, you know, if I were an official, they couldn't give me enough yellow flags, right? I'd be flagged. I'm like, I always turn to him like, didn't that used to be unsportsmanlike? How is that sportsmanlike? You know, it's just
if you
like,
do celebration with the ball, it is unsportsmanlike conduct.
Whatever it is, it doesn't work for me. Yeah. I'm not here to be entertained by a defensive lineman's dance for doing his job. I want to watch.
Isn't that where the dance
and
the sprinkler came from?
I want to watch the sport. I want to watch.
Yeah.
And anything that makes college football more like the NFL, I don't really like.
Well, they look up to the NFL. That's where they want to be.
Yeah.
They're aspiring to be there.
Mm-hmm. Some of them.
Some of them want to make the $1 million, the $10 million that the NFL pays.
Unless you're Antonio Brown, then it's more important to tweet things
and
get fired. So, all right, let's move on. Let's talk
totally
about
different.
Salem, shall we?
Yes, please.
You started this.
I know.
We got Salem City Councilor to replace. We've got people contesting land use decisions in the city. We've got some repairs going on at the ferries north and south of town. Some interesting priorities coming out of the city council and so forth. So let's get started with the city council. Okay, Sally Cook left. We all know that. There's a vacancy in Ward 7. We've been talking about that in Newsmakers.
Mm-hmm.
11 people signed up and raised their hand and said, I'll fill in. That's nice.
Is it up to 14 now? I think it's up to 14.
Oh, at last press, when I read an article in the Statesman Journal, it was at 11. But they've already limited to three that will move forward for interviews. So Reed Sund. Now, Reed has already filed to run for this seat prior to the resignation, I believe. So Reed had already expressed a desire to run for Ward 7 election for next May. So we're getting a head start. Vanessa Nordyke. She's been on the budget committee in the past, and Bonnie Heitch, who has not been on a city committee, but she's been on the school board.
Hmm.
So they've set a date of October 21st in the city council. That's when the whole city council will interview them, and they'll probably, I'd be surprised if they did not, select a new city councilor at that meeting later on the 21st. So,
when are they hoping to swear them in?
They'd swear them in, right? Yeah, that same night, presume. Well, no, they would appoint them and maybe the very next city council meeting.
Oh.
So
could be a week.
It's not a big ceremony.
I mean,
it's the city attorney and raise your hand. And
welcome to job with no pay.
Yeah, and sit down, you're making
and
decisions.
And a lot of criticism.
Only half the people will hate you. Welcome.
Only half? I think it's 80% at this point.
So, unfortunately, we were talking about him earlier in the week, but Warren Benares did not get selected for an interview. I thought he'd be a perfect choice, of course, because he's knowledgeable and he's a civic servant. And he also said he didn't want to run. I wouldn't be surprised if Warren was willing to serve just until the May election, because then he could have stepped down and whoever won the primary in May could have taken the seat. And that'll be interesting to play out as well in terms of who is this person's going to take the seat. Will they end up filing to run for the seat, which I'm completely against. Everybody should be, because you shouldn't be creating an automatic incumbent.
Right.
Sorry, Reed Son, but I just don't think people should do that. Anyway, so see if the person who is there temporarily is going to run for the seat. And if they're not, then will they step down in May after the primary? Or will they just say, well, I was here, but now you have an elected individual, and if I step down, you can appoint this person to start early? Or will they serve all through 2020, which is the remainder of Sally Cook's term?
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of politics, and I don't think the mayor is too keen on talking about the backroom politics when we have him on the show.
No.
So.
He has avoided it most of the time.
We can ask, but I don't know that he's going to be talking about it.
He always tells us the answer off the record, by the way.
Yeah, because Dave and I now know everything happening in the city in the back rooms.
Not necessarily.
We just can't tell you.
No.
All right, a couple of things they were surveying, and this is interesting. I'm on somebody's list of person who answers the phone and does the survey, right? Because I, when they say, how many Oregonians are for or against blah, 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 I want my voice in there.
Okay.
So I'm not one of the people that hang up on them. Do you have 10 minutes to answer some questions about the national elections coming? I'm like, yes, I do.
I never get those.
You don't?
Well, no.
Well, if you get one and you say, yes, I do, then you'll probably get another one.
Okay.
459 people surveyed. And that's the other thing. We're talking about a city of 160,000 people.
And only less than 500?
459 people surveyed.
Yeah, less than 500.
Margin of error, in case you forgot in your statistics class, about 4.5 to 5% margin of error.
That's big.
All right. So, but the question was, for the Salemites, what are some of your highest priorities? And it must have been a long list, because there was only one that was in double digits. One thing in the city that was in double digits for these 459 people surveyed. You want to guess what it was?
Traffic.
Yeah, I thought it would be too. I think thought traffic and congestion would be number one. Homeless.
What?
Homeless. Remember, the mayor has been talking about that, and that's, you know, people on both sides, people that want to do something about those homeless and do something for those homeless, but that's the number one thing that they're getting at city council and mayor is people in Salem are concerned about the issue around homelessness.
What was the estimated number of homeless on the street? Was that 1,000?
No, it's more like 5,000.
5,000?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm way off.
So then the next two highest ones are a little bit connected. But they're only 7% and 6% of the people listed them as one of their highest priorities in the city. Roads, potholes, and infrastructure, right? So traffic.
You know, the people don't really think about the infrastructure, I think, because it's always there. Sewer, water, yeah, electricity.
Well, they thought about it. Thought about water a year ago.
Well, yes, they did. They discovered that the infrastructure is important. When it's affected.
And when you flush that toilet, nothing happens. Then they really think about infrastructure.
Yeah, so. Especially when it backs up.
And the third highest. Mind you, 41% homeless. And then it drops way down to 7% of respondents. 7% of 459 people.
Mm-hmm.
Checked roads, potholes, infrastructure.
Okay.
6% traffic and congestion, which to me is connected to infrastructure.
Sure.
And roads, traffic, congestion. So you combine those two things together and you've got 13%.
So, that's it?
You know, 1 in 8. I'm, a little surprised.
Do they not drive across the bridge or even in Salem?
Oh, my.
Because
you don't even have to be. You just be downtown and you
the fringe of Salem. I'm serious. Just the fringe of Salem is backed up. They're just. When was the last time they built a road here?
So if you get this call, Salemites, about what's important, you know, Brent here on Newsmakers is urging you to say transportation infrastructure.
Yeah.
Or just drop an email to staff and the city council and say, this is our priority, and stop pretending that it is something else.
Right?
All right, we've got more to do with the city. And this after gentleman, we've talked about this. Yeah. And the use, the appeal of subdivisions. And what's controversial at city council is almost always has to do with land use, right? And so let's hammer this home, folks, and what you can and cannot appeal with and what the chances are of this gentleman's appeal of the city of Salem's decision and what kind of snowball's chance he's got.
Ooh.
We're going to come right back. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
Welcome back to Friday edition of Newsmakers, folks. Mm-hmm. I'm Brent Tahard. It just makes me laugh how much Dave Bourne loves Fridays.
As opposed to Monday.
Yes. And we're talking about some City of Salem land use stuff. Before we get to that, though, did you know there are Bible verses on some In-N-Out packaging, In-N-Out burger packaging?
Some? I thought it was in all of it.
Yeah, I think it started with like fries and drinks. I had no idea. Of course, I'm not a frequent visitor to In-N-Out Burger. I'm not a person who waits in line for, you know, a fast food burger.
I thought that was Chick-fil-A.
And that's my question, is Chick-fil-A gets in all this trouble, all this social media problem and political trouble because they're owned by Christian people who believe in Christian faith and Christian values. They're closed on Sundays.
Right.
Right. How come nobody pickets In-N-Out? Well, I guess it's coming, right? If they get
good
wind of the fact that these people have the audacity to have Christian values. But
well,
I don't
remember.
Idea.
Well, you remember the firestorm basically the Starbucks went through when somebody perceived their cups to be, you know, Christian when it was a plain cup that had like looked like Christmassy. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And
I
there
just
was
didn't
a,
understand
there
it
was
at
a,
the time.
I know, right? There was a firestorm about that. So they changed their cups.
It's one of those things, you know, people are equating Christianity with intolerance or Christianity with discrimination. So
I think they forgot what it means.
The answer is to discriminate against Christians. And Christians need to remember, well, maybe a lot of us don't even know anymore. A lot of Christians don't even know how much persecution they suffered for the first 200 years of Christianity.
Yeah.
Right? It was illegal and it was underground. And it survived just in the Roman Empire, despite, you know, people being executed for being Christians and all the persecutions and the illegalities. And, you know, we've got nothing on the Israelites and the Hebrews and the Jewish faith. We've got nothing in terms of centuries and centuries, right? But absolutely, Christians were persecuted in the early Roman Empire, and there's no time to go back.
Right.
You can't, you know. So my son has a friend who believes that you cannot discriminate and you cannot be racist. You can't be racist against white people. That doesn't exist.
What?
You could be a different race than white and be racist against white people. You cannot discriminate against the majority. Like,
what?
That's not a possibility. I'm like, yes, you actually can. There can be discrimination against the majority. So it's really, really strange mindset in America these days. It's like you can't have anything goes, and you can't preach diversity, you can't preach tolerance, and then be intolerant of people who are different than you.
Right.
All right. Just ask Ellen DeGeneres, right?
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. In-N-Out Burger. That just surprised me. So, but you know, more power to them.
Yeah.
Like it. And, of course, it's privately held.
Freedom of expression.
Right? So let's...
covered in the First Amendment.
All right, so Nathan, I don't know if it's Reitman or Reitman, but it looks like Reitman to me.
Mm-hmm.
He's a local attorney. He's a neighbor in a subdivision in Salem Heights, and they're trying to approve, I think it's 33 homes or something like that. Well, it was approved. The subdivision was approved.
Okay.
So he's appealing that decision. It's been through the Planning Commission and I believe the City Council as well. And he wants to appeal that decision and get it shot down so that the developer cannot develop there.
And it's not his land, right?
Not his land.
And it's probably in his backyard.
It is in kind of more or less in his backyard.
So yes. It's going to affect his view?
He's concerned about traffic.
No, he's not. He's concerned about his view. And he doesn't want neighbors next door.
We don't even know if he has a view, but
I'm sure he does.
To him, and what he's appealing on is that the collector streets that these subdivision will dump into is already unsafe, and it's not has capacity, and it's not built to standard to be able to take on this additional traffic.
Okay. And the city council didn't address that in the transportation package?
You know, that's the one thing. Well, ideally.
It is the city's responsibility.
Ideally, it has. And that's the one thing. You know, I would say maybe he has an argument, except that I know that the developer had to do a traffic study. And there's a number of trips generated, folks. There's a science to all of this. There's traffic engineering sciences, and how many trips are generated from your home to the grocery store, from your home to work, from your home, and so forth. Those things have to be counted. A traffic impact study has to be done, and the city has to determine that the roads can handle it. And if they don't, a lot of times, as we saw on Kubler Boulevard,
right,
the developer is required to improve by adding lanes and stop signs and whatever.
Widen
else
the road and all that kind of stuff.
So I could see at least contesting, maybe saying that the methodology or the conclusions in the traffic study were faulty. So I'll give you half a point there.
Okay.
The other complaint is that there's trees. There's a lot of trees on the lot, and they're going to get cut down.
All of them?
I think it's the developer. All of them.
No, the developer usually works around them or tries to
as much as possible, but you can't put in roads.
Or replants them.
Yes. And there's, all right, folks, if you weren't around in the early 2000s to go through this, there's
Walk
a tree ordinance.
Yeah.
There's a tree ordinance. It was passed. It was a hard-fought battle between different frames of mind in the community. People who wanted to preserve all the trees and grow the canopy, and people who wanted to have the ability to develop homes and subdivisions and so forth. So in the tree ordinance, actually, I was on city council when we passed it.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And it was one of those things like, well, we really don't like this. Both sides said that, which probably makes for a good ordinance.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost never great law when only one party votes, you know, for it and zero members of the other party. So you'd have two factions hammering out what are we going to do about trees in Salem, and neither one loves the output, but they're willing to live with it. That's probably a good compromise in there.
Yeah, that's great compromise.
So X number of trees would have to be preserved.
And X number need to be
planted.
Yeah.
And each new home has to have a certain amount of trees and the landscaping and so forth. What gets lost in this discussion all the time, and I hope our folks at Green Acres are listening, of course, is that everybody loves the trees.
Right.
I mean, they make a living at it. People want greenery in the yard. It's just not like everybody wants to tear it down and have barren earth.
Mm-mm.
But people want trees, and they're more valuable lots with mature trees. So it doesn't pay a subdivision developer to cut down trees that'll make the community look attractive.
Right.
All right. Anyway, he's appealing. I don't think he's got a prayer on the trees thing because there's already a tree ordinance. These things have been hammered out. How many trees can be cut down? What types can be cut down? And how many they need to plant? And the whole thing. Well, you're getting rid of the these homes for the critters, right? The habitat for the critters that live in this urban neighborhood.
Okay.
Yeah, folks. Folks, that's why we have an urban growth boundary, so that we grow things inside. We build things inside the urban growth boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Our whole land use in Oregon is designed to protect the habitat outside the urban growth boundary, folks. Outside the urban growth boundary, there can be forests and there can be farms and things like that. So you can't take the middle of town where there's an ability to grow inside the urban growth boundary and not build. It's contrary to land use planning in Oregon, what supposedly we all believe in.
Right.
So, yeah, you can't. I mean, if you want it as a park, buy it and gift it to the park.
No, there you go.
Right?
Yeah.
It gets down to if you want to have say over what your neighbor landowner does with their property, you need to buy that property from their neighbor landowner. Otherwise, you really don't have a say.
If you're
and
talking,
certainly, this is a waste of time and money.
Absolutely.
And this is how, folks, This is how housing gets more and more expensive.
Yes.
Because developers have to pay more, and time is money, and they finance this development, and they got to sit on their hands and pay interest in loan payments while he exhausts all of these appeals and loses them.
Right.
Would be my prediction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And loses them. In the meantime, the houses can't get built, and everything gets more expensive.
Yes.
And I think what Dave Bourne was referring to was the NIMBYism, but not in my backyard.
Yes.
This is in my neighborhood, and it's fine if you want to develop in South Salem Hills and West Salem Hills, but here in the South, you know, Salem Heights area, we don't want you to develop because we like these trees in our neighborhood.
Did he check the map? Because, yeah, he's inside the urban growth boundary, right?
Yeah, yes. And the land is zoned for housing.
Yeah.
So it's not like so, it's in, they're putting in an industrial use in his neighborhood.
No.
That's different.
More
that,
homes.
That you can appeal and say, no, this is a residential neighborhood and it should be residential and should be zoned for resident. But it's residential homes in a residential neighborhood that's zoned for that. And
sounds like he likes the wild look that's outside his backyard.
The trees are protected by ordinance, which is stronger than many, many, perhaps most communities in all of America.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's the white oak.
Oh,
here's
boy.
The thing about the white oak. I don't know what the deal is with the white oak. Some people, it's just become that, you know, flagpole in the ground thing that people rally around that these white oaks have to be protected. In the said tree ordinance, we've protected white oaks, great white oaks, specifically as a species that we can't cut these down. We have to work around them.
Wow.
As a sidelight, folks, I want you to know that none of this tree ordinance applies to commercial real estate. So how it enters into the conversation and the site for the potential Costco location in Kubler should not be a factor because the tree ordinance does not apply to anything but residential.
Yet the Costco one looked to save
yes.
a few of them, right?
Yeah. Well, you can do it for public relations reasons, or you can do it because the city asked you to and it is a trade-off,
mm-hmm.
but it is not subject to the tree ordinance.
So Costco right? did a good thing.
I don't know about that. I'm just saying when they want to throw that argument in there, what about the trees and aren't they protected? Well, no, they're not because it's commercial land.
Commercial, yeah.
Right. Commercial industrial has nothing to do with this. So the gray white oak, I remember Dan Clem, city councilor, Ward 8 at the time, just stumping for this great white oak and its protection, and it went into the ordinance and they're specially protected. I don't understand it. I love trees. I have 200 trees on my property, you know, and I've got, I don't know how many species. It's all awesome. But I just don't get how one type of tree is sacred around here.
Hmm.
What is it, folks, with the great white oak? What is it about that one? There are a lot of indigenous trees around here. What is it with the great white oak? And if it is such a big deal, why don't we plant some more?
Right.
Why don't we plant a grove of them? Right. Why don't we plant some... in Minto Brown, there's plenty of room there for a lot of great white oaks. Why don't we plant them in Wallace Marine Park or Bush Park? I mean, I don't get it. If you love them so much, how come you never hear about planting them?
Right. They hear about saving them.
I saw something on social media. It was the same thing about a city, Los Angeles, trying to grow its tree canopy. It was a very interesting article, actually. And they'd hired an urban forester. Very interesting. And they want to grow the tree canopy for a lot of great reasons. Keep, they obviously suck up CO2, shade, bring down temperatures,
sure.
quality of life, all sorts of, they will chain water. And so they'll absorb some of the waters and rain so it doesn't flood as much. A lot of great reasons for them to have a city forester and increase the tree canopy. And I just think, okay, in this day of obsession with global warming and climate, and this and that, why doesn't every city in the nation have a, why isn't that part of the conversation? Instead of stomping about single family vehicles and anything that's carbon related, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just grow a hell of a lot more trees?
Right.
Why isn't that part of it?
Yeah.
I don't know. Brent's pondering. All right, we got to take a break. But folks, I hope if you're a regular listener to Newsmakers, you're starting to understand some of the vagaries of land use and really what's a waste of time and what we can complain about and what we can't complain about.
So and what's important to Brent.
Appreciate you being here listening to local stuff here on local radio. I'm Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Come right back. We're going to talk about some fairies on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and this is your spot for local news. We're talking about the city council vacancy and getting replaced. Three people have been selected to be interviewed by city council, by the complete city council. They did use a subcommittee to narrow it down from the 11 candidates that threw their name in the hat. Reed Sun, Vanessa Nordyke, and Bonnie Heitsch are going to be the three that are interviewed, and one of them is most likely going to be selected on October 21st. Also, city council, well, city developer, wants to develop houses in Salem Heights Division, and Nathan Reitman has appealed that, and that'll go to Land Use Board of Appeals, and this is the kind of local stuff that really shouldn't go into the state government, but
right.
There's a role for it. We need it. I'm glad it's there. They're going to let it is, but
there's also abusing it.
When there's, I don't know. I haven't read the complaint, but I'd be surprised. We'll ask the mayor about it, but who won't be able to say anything about it because it's being sued or something. But
right, they're in a lawsuit.
Too often these situations are should be a rubber stamp, and if they comply, they comply because it's written into land use ordinances mm-hmm. and traffic ordinances and everything else, and you have to find a flaw in the findings of fact or the methodology or something, and that's a pretty tall order. That's a folly. It's kind of connected, actually, Dave Warren, to the Detroit, the city of Detroit, and the rules regarding RVs. And there's some concern about that. Yeah, a few years back, they loosened up the rules about how many RVs could be up there and where they could be parked and how many could be parked and so forth. Now the concern is that it's too loose and it's being abused, and there's too many RVs in a place that,
you know, in a recreational area. There's too many.
Yeah, and like for a lot that should be, it's designed for a single family home, but they'll have three or four RVs, and it's not there for vacation, or it's not there for
Living in them,
and or they're parking them for the entire summer season.
Well, so, what's wrong with that? Well, we used to go camping up there all the time. We had a cabin, but we also had RVs and campers mm-hmm. there with us mm-hmm. of friends, and they came and stayed.
So they used to have more restrictions, and now they've loosened up, and they think because they've loosened up and there's no enforcement that there's been explosion of them and they're being abused. And so the rules are being, you know, really stretched. Mm-hmm. And in the news article, it was, I believe this week or last week, Kevin Cameron was mentioned, and we'll ask him about this first week of October when we have him on. Because he owns, not November, thank you, and because he owns a couple of lots, and right. he leases them out to people who have RVs on them. Okay. So it's legal to have an RV on the lot and even live in it while you build a house and things like that. But if you have a lot and you're suddenly renting it out like a RV park, then that becomes an issue.
I can see that.
So some people don't want them to. They said, "Hey, we need the people. We need to have ability to park. We run on recreation." So
it is a recreational area.
Please don't tighten up the restrictions. This yeah. is our economy. So it's going to be a bit of a fight, but there's going to hopefully find somewhere in the middle between people who think that they've gone too far. And then when it comes to fresh water and what to do with the sewer, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's where, you know, how much can the Detroit area really handle?
We had an outhouse.
You had an outhouse?
Yeah.
Wow.
We had to go outside.
Wow.
There was a bathroom inside, but yeah. There was an outside outhouse.
You have to control the quantity of such such yes. material. Anyway, it's connected because, you know, it's use of the land, and when is the use infringing upon somebody else's rights? When is the use offending somebody and they think that they have rights that they don't have rights, and all of these things intersect.
So somebody picked up the phone and said, "Hey, so and so's got too many campers on his lot."
Yes, that happens, and it's a concern, with the sewage people are on, because some lots, like there was an example of somebody bought a lot, but unfortunately the lot was not sizable or was not amenable to having a septic system on it, so their only option was to have an RV. Well, was it designed, was the city designed to have people, residents, living in RVs or visiting in RVs.
Oh.
Right. Okay. All right. So all we'll, right. We'll ask County Commissioner Cameron when he's up, because he is intimately knowledgeable as, about the goings-on in Detroit as he lives there. Lives there and owns property.
Good
there.
Person to ask.
All right. So that's connected. So the ferry. Let's talk about the ferries. We've got two ferries north and south of town, the Wheatland Ferry, of course, and the Buena Vista Ferry, which I was on this summer for the first time. 1852 in Buena Vista, they started crossing people across the Willamette, south of Independence.
See, even then, they knew they needed some way to cross.
Well, the population exploded. There's so many more people, you're going to have a river crossing.
Yeah, right?
Apparently, they were smarter in 1852 than our current policymakers.
Because they built more than one.
And the Wheatland Ferry, it was already in existence since 1844.
See?
Folks, let's see. When was Oregon become a state? So prior to becoming a state, we really understood the need for infrastructure to cross the Willamette.
Mm-hmm.
Here in 219, not so much.
They built, what, two bridges in that whole time?
Well, three. Well, three, because you have the bridge to Independence. Well, two, if you ask the mayor, the Center Street and Marion Street.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's it.
For the city of Salem.
Yeah, between these two ferries, that was... That's
what?
It. Yeah, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
All right, so the concern with the two ferries is that they go on electricity, and this was a shock to me, but 10 times a year they lose power.
How?
I don't know.
Don't they have backup?
One of them, they don't have backup.
Oh.
And that's the whole thing. And that surprised me. The ticket always surprises me when you're dealing with the public job,
mm-hmm.
or the public construction or public improvement. The price tag always surprises me. So they want to do backup power, right, and do some improvements to the ferry and so forth. $2 million.
What?
$2 million. It's not like they're creating a new ferry crossing. The ferry crossing is already there. It's already paved. They've got the overhead guy wires, right, and the power wires and everything.
Wait. Do they not make you pull it?
You don't have to pull it, no.
They should make you pull it. You would appreciate it more.
Well, yeah, when the power goes out. There was, in the story,
okay.
It was like power went out for like 4 hours and the ferry's in the middle of the river.
You have to pull then.
That could be a, that would be
that's
a
your backup.
Dent in your day. All right, backup power, no four more four-hour outages. They got a $1.6 million grant. And this cracks me up, folks. It's $1.6 million grant. It's from the Federal Highway Administration's ferry boat program. Did you know that the Federal Highway Administration has a ferry boat program?
No.
Wow.
There's a lot of government programs I don't know about.
A lot. But they can't cut any of them in Washington.
No,
in Washington,
no.
They can never cut any of them. $1.6 million from them, $400,000 from Marion County gasoline tax revenue. But I'm for the upgrades. I mean... We talk about this. It's like you would be shocked. You'd be appalled when something catastrophic happens, right? Oh, they didn't think to have backup power here?
Right.
Right. They didn't think to blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't think to fix the all the water and flooding issues in New Orleans before the hurricane came.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you shouldn't be surprised that they never thought of it. So more power. Marion County, thank you for doing it. I'm shocked that it's $1 million a ferry. Right.
Wow.
I'm shocked that ferries are still a major way for us to get across the river right now.
It seems appalling, actually.
Almost like an anachronism. I mean, to take a ferry from Puget Sound area out to an island, that's kind of cool. It's quaint, downright quaint. But to need two ferries in the Mid-Valley to even get vehicles across. Wow.
I'm going to have to try the Wheatland.
Anachronistic. Yes, you should.
That would be fun.
So power out, power, backup power, so that when they do lose power due to storms or accidents. Then
or in case of the catastrophic one.
Yeah. Yes. And when they talk about that in the news articles, is that when we have a catastrophe, say, and the bridges are out.
Yep. That's probably going to be one of the first things that goes.
Yeah.
Is the bridges.
And what's particularly scary as well is if it's bad weather and it's flooding, those ferries don't run in high volume water. And they can only handle so much volume of water before they'll strain, you know,
The guy wire.
The tethering,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So sometimes we have situations where the ferries won't even run because the waters are running too high and too fast. So, I don't know. I'm glad they're doing it. They're still talking about emergency preparedness for the Salem Airport. And all of these things, but they're thinking ahead and using some federal money to bring back home.
How about building another bridge?
Let's do that.
Couple more bridges.
This is connected for
me. They're about three behind right now.
In 2008, and we've talked about this on Newsmakers, but 2008, we passed the $24 million fire bond measure, which seems incredibly low now. That was just 24
million.
Wow. But they replaced, and we're going to see it again, folks, in the next 3 to 4 years. We'll see another one because that's how we purchase as a community. We purchase all of our rolling stock. Mm-hmm. And those trucks are designed to last, you know, 10 to 15 years. So it's been 11.
Ooh, coming up.
But they did replace all the rolling stock of the for our fire department here in Salem, including some rural uses, airport uses, and so forth. That's not the point, Brent. But at the fire stations in 2008, most of them did not have backup power.
What?
They did not have backup power. In our first responders, our infrastructure was sorely lacking. That was an easy decision to make, and hopefully, wow, you know, an easy decision for the Salem voters to make as well. So we emergency backup power in all the fire stations, and also we seismically upgraded all of those stations that hadn't been done. So can you imagine 2008 in the capital city of Oregon? We had fire stations that, in the big earthquake, the firemen would have been trapped in rubble. And the trucks, and they'd have no power.
Wow.
So that was an easy one to vote yes on. Yeah. It's an easy one. It's like, oh, we haven't done this. Like, yes, please. So this is related in a much smaller scale, but still it's going to be critical in our planning and in our transportation, in our infrastructure, and in our emergency preparedness. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to take a break. It's Friday. We got one segment left, so stick with us. Thanks for being with us on your news hour. Get prepared to take the afternoon off because Brent said so. Here on 1430 KYKN, Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by our friends at Green Acres Landscape.
Speaking of friends, this is Brent DeHart.
You have one?
Here with Dave Bourne. I've got this couple of friends, and one's okay. A duck, an avid duck.
Yes.
And for folks, in case you can't see through your radio, Dave Bourne today is wearing an Oregon green jacket and an Oregon polo shirt, Nike polo shirt. So he's dressed for Oregon Duck Day. So these friends, he's a very avid duck, and their kids are ducks. And his wife is pretty much a duck. You know, she's been indoctrinated, but she's a buffalo.
Well, what?
She's a buffalo.
Wow.
So I hope there's no... I may have to invite him over tonight so that there's not sort of marital conflict in the household as the ducks roll all over the buffaloes.
I'm still trying to figure out how my stepdaughter became a beaver.
Because she's smart?
She didn't go to...
Because
she didn't go there. The family's all ducks.
Because...
And she picks the beavers.
That's what you call rebelling.
Totally.
So I know of a man, and I'm not going to out him or anything, but he's a big duck, big thing. And like has not just season tickets, but I think a luxury box.
Right? Wow.
Big supporter, big duck. One of the buildings at Oregon State is named after his father.
Whoops.
Right in the family. So it's like, wait, this is how big of supporters you are to OSU, and then you become a duck. Anyway,
that's rebelling on another level.
I just want to talk about movies and sports for the remaining minutes we have left.
We can.
I decided to get myself in trouble.
Oh, boy.
Let's talk a little bit about Salem Kaiser. So we're going to see, we've talked about the Student Success Act, also known as the Corporate Activities Tax, also known as, you know, whatever.
New tax.
New taxes, $2 billion. But it does mean that more money is going to come into Salem Kaiser schools. $35 million we anticipate in this, and the school district and the superintendent, Christy Perry, has convened a group to try to determine what are we going to do with the extra money, the additional money. I don't know if they would ever call it extra, but additional money.
No, they would never call it extra.
And they need to report to the state how it's going to be used as well.
Okay.
And so that's great. Jumping right on it, and you know, a few dozen people are participating, a lot of people from the school district itself and so forth. And a task force, you know, took place last month, and they're looking, how do we help students that lag behind the district average?
You know?
And as we know, because not every school is scoring the same, schools, as we reported here on KYKN in the news, area code 97305 has a graduation. It's only 75.5%. That's three out of four people are graduating, and 25% of people are walking without a high school diploma in 97305. That's the fifth worst zip code in the state, and it's right here in our community.
Uh-oh.
Fifth worst. So not every area is experiencing the same test scores, experience the same problems in graduation rates and so forth. So great, let's convene the group and so forth. And I don't think this is going to be one of those committees I'm not invited to.
Why would that be?
Here's my thing, and I brought this up with the superintendent.
Why wouldn't you be invited? You have the answers, don't you?
Yes. Okay. And that's the problem. Because if I got there, nobody else would be necessary.
Gotcha.
All right. Christy Perry, she focused the group on Black, Pacific Islander, Native American students, also students from low-income families, students with disabilities, and students who are homeless or foster care. Okay?
Okay.
I get it. I think I would have stopped the students that lag behind the district averages. And not try to classify them.
Right.
Some of these things, I think, are very appropriate in terms of we need to take a look at the population of people from low-income families, right? Maybe they have two working parents. Maybe they don't have as much parental involvement in their education. What do we need to do to help them? That's a socioeconomic issue, right? Students with disabilities, obvious.
You know,
the transportation issues, time and commitment issues, funds sometimes, poverty plays into it. That's a social and social economic and health issue. Homeless or foster care goes without saying. No stable home, fewer resources. It's not like they go home and they use mom's iPad, no. Right? So these things are important. And what do we have to do to get them up to speed and give them the advantages that life has given, because life has given them disadvantages? And then you say Black. To me, that's incredibly racist.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you saying Black? That's the color of their skin. That's the color of their skin. That's not a socioeconomic group. It's not a disability, right?
Right.
It's not a physical, a mental handicap. It's a color of skin. And that's what I don't get. To me, that's racist. And that's a whole other conversation in our community, in our world and public policy. But why are we singling them out to look at them because of their color of skin? Pacific Islander?
Same thing.
Yeah, that's a race thing. Now, if it's a language thing, I get it. If they're here and they're immigrants from Pacific Islander, but they're fourth generation Pacific Islanders, then
I'll speak
that's
English.
A race thing.
Yeah, I'll speak English.
So, I don't know. It just seems like you're setting apart these groups and telling them, we need to do something about you because, you know, you need the extra help.
Mm.
And that smacks of a little bit of great white mother and father syndrome. All right, we got to go. That's it for our Friday. Everybody get ready to watch the Ducks. It's beautiful out, so make an excuse to leave work and not come back.
Right.
Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you supporting local radio on Newsmakers 1430 KYKN.
We'll see you on Monday.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.